A Midday with Howie Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
This is Money FM 89.3, Singapore's first business and personal finance station. Now, the National Council of Social Service recently announced a new study on workplace adjustments for persons in recovery from mental health conditions. And they found that local employers perceive costs involved are double than what they actually are. So what gives and what can be done to debunk some of these misconceptions? Leading the charge is Hush Tea Bar, which is completely run by a small team of differently abled persons, including three people in recovery from mental health and four deaf individuals. Anthea Ong is founder of Hush Tea Bar and a nominated Member of Parliament. Anthea, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Howie. Thanks for having me.
So we have some misconceptions about social enterprises as a start. What are the difference, you reckon, between a social enterprise, a charity, and a normal business?
Okay, I'm gonna do this more from my own understanding.
Okay.
So let's start with the legal differences first. A charity really raises funds and provides services for groups and communities that may need help. So surpluses are kept as reserves. Typical commercial entities' primary objective is to maximize profits for the shareholders. Although, to be fair, increasingly they're also pressured to create social value as well. Where social enterprises are concerned, we are not defined by a legal code. It is more of an ethical, or I should say, a social code.
Okay.
In the sense that
you sort of straddle the two.
Yes, because there are social enterprises in Singapore, at least, and actually around the world, that are also registered as charities. Right?
But they're also commercial entities to some degree, because profitability still has to be thought about.
Not necessarily. So there are social enterprises that are registered as charities, and they then provide services and goods, for that matter, to the community and collects an income. But, you know, that's the same as a charity, getting donors to, you know, donate funds and all that, right? And then there are social enterprises, who are registered, obviously, as, private businesses.
Mm.
And they then obviously would also look at both profit and, the social mission as their objective. So I think the fundamental difference, in terms of social enterprises really is not a legal code. It's not a legal structure per se, but it's actually more of an ethical and moral code when you define a social enterprise, because a social enterprise would need to have both, you know, the viability aspect of it that they need to look at, whether it's a charity or a private business. But more importantly, it's always the social mission is a huge priority.
Are there criteria that you need to meet in order to call yourself a social enterprise?
The social mission.
Standards you need to
Definitely. You definitely need to have a social mission. But one of my biggest thing is that, you know, when we do that, we tend to let, you know, the commercial enterprises go scot-free and say, oh, okay, I'm not a social enterprise. But actually, I kind of think that every commercial enterprise should also have a social mission.
Okay.
Even if that's not the overwhelming, overarching objective of why you exist.
Yeah.
But we are still part of the community. So, yeah, but definitely the social mission is a criteria that you are actually working towards as an entity before you can kind of, you know, self-proclaimed to be a social enterprise.
So let's talk about Hush Tea Bar then, Anthea. Mm-hmm. What was the impetus for it? You're the founder. It is run by some differently abled people, mm-hmm. as we mentioned mm-hmm. earlier. Was a personal experience that brought you to this place?
When everything I knew as what my life was collapsed in one fell swoop. So, you know, 12 years ago when I experienced a colossal collapse, I love to use the word because it felt like that and it still feels like that when I talk about it. You know, a broken marriage, a broken business and a broken bank account. Actually all happening, you know, very swiftly at the height of what is, you know, what we commonly call success. And I think that was when it really got me to realize that, you know, we are living in this rush every day that perpetuates that sense of I'm not enough, I have to catch up, you know, I must do more. And so that then motivated me to, well, obviously silence as a practice in the form of, you know, walking in a park and, you know, reading books and meditating. It really saved me first and then healed me. But I also felt that there's such a need to bring self-care and silence into the workplace and actually also every community so that we then have that pause To connect with ourselves and know, you know, why we're doing what we're doing.
So when you say silent, you mean just stop talking.
Absolutely.
So it defeats the purpose of what we're doing today here, a live radio interview here, Anthea. But Hush Tea Bar is Singapore's first silent tea bar. Mm. You're trying to bring the world of hearing and the deaf together with a cup of tea.
That's absolutely
Tell us more.
So the whole idea there was, okay, to bring self-care and silence to the workplace. One of the statistics that I would never forget, which was in 2014, when just before I started Hush as a social experiment, was that 90% of psychological conditions with adults here in Singapore, Straits Times reported that, the root cause was workplace stress. And it's true if you think about it, because we spend
not
so much
unbelievable,
of our,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because so many of our waking hours are spent at the workplace. And also with the youth, one in four young people actually suffer from depressive symptoms in a survey that was done by NTU, also around the same time. And so if you think about it, you know, there's something we really need to do there. And I personally, you know, feel that silence in the form of a pause, in the form of taking stock, in the form of reflection, really helps us to just kind of, you know, give ourselves that connection with ourselves, right? And take away us from the rush. So the other part of it, obviously, is to bring in our friends from the deaf community, because who better to teach us silence than them?
They live in silence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But more than that, I was also really concerned that there aren't more places, more safe places and spaces where we're coming together to understand and truly accept people who are different from us, right? Not that, oh, I tolerate you with an intellectual acceptance, but you don't actually even interact with people who are different from you. It's all kind of, you know, lip service. And so, you know, Hush also create that space where, you know, people who are very different come together. And in that, as a hearing participant is going through a cup of tea in silent reflection, we also want him or her to then experientially challenge their notion of difference and ability. Because in that silent environment, they can see the ability of the deaf and they can experience their own disability. And I also personally feel, I mean, I talk a lot, clearly, even though I enjoy silence.
I was just going to ask, you reckon us normal folk talk too much?
I do.
Hence the need for silence. Okay.
Including me. And so, yeah, I think so. And also, I think it's so important. This world of silence is something that's so uncomfortable for us. Right? And yet they live in it, day in, day out, in our midst. How much do we really understand?
It's a challenging endeavor you're asking people to go through, because unfortunately the hearing impaired had no choice.
Right.
We, though, have the choice. Yeah. It is challenging to then choose to live in silence just so that we can relate to someone who's hearing impaired.
Mm.
How are you getting people on board with the idea?
So easily. So easily and with such compelling experiences and stories to share. I think it is because exactly that it is so uncomfortable that shift is so visceral and that empathy is so experiential. And that something shifts in them. And in doing so, that silence allowed them. There was a doctor when we were doing a Hush session for the healthcare sector. He's actually one of the healthcare leaders. And as a doctor, he listens to the heart of patients for over 35 years by then in his career. And yet it was when he was going through the Hush experience that for the first time he heard his own heartbeat. And he actually, when he was sharing with us, he's choked with emotion, because it is such a huge realization that, you know, we so put ourselves last. And I tend to think that self-care has such a bad rap because it's equated with, you know, self-centeredness and selfishness and self-indulgence.
And a measure of flightiness almost, you know.
Yes,
there are serious things to be done. You
exactly,
can't be just hugging
exactly
a tree all day
trying to find yourself. I mean, I have trees, but, you know, literally. But I don't think it's about that. It's about that if you truly want to give the best of yourself to the world, why are you not doing it
Why not taking care of yourself?
Because
in the first
place, have to be the one who's actually in the right space and right place to be able to give your best to the world and not what's left of you for the world. And that includes your own loved ones, your children and your family, and your work. If you really want to realize your full potential, that's really important. So I really hope that we start to change, you know, our views about what self-care means. And that really should be the first place to start, because I feel that the change you want to see in the world really does have to start from you.
Hmm. So said Gandhi, yes. So briefly tell us what the hushed tea experience is like. Does it just mean keeping quiet, or does it also mean not hearing things, ear plugged up and everything?
That's right. Yeah. Well done. Spot on. So they are given earplugs when they step in. But of course, it's impossible to get someone to kind of, hey, get a cup of tea, go sit quietly in one corner and don't talk, right? It's really difficult. Sounds like punishment almost. But it's not. It's very, very novel. You're guided. You learn to sign with the deaf facilitators, or we call them tea readers sometimes, so that you also learn a new language. And in that, you express yourself. And we deliberately used words that are soft, that are emotion-related. So even our teas are named after emotions, like delectably robust, or simply tranquil, so that you get into a different sense of place when you come into the experience. You choose the tea, you know, serve the tea, you're then guided through a tea reflection ritual, and it can be, you know, on gratitude, and in a very, you know, straightforward questions, not, you know, kind of airy-fairy questions like, who are you grateful for?
Or too existential, maybe.
No. Yeah. So who are you grateful for? You know, what challenge are you grateful for? And asking a question on what challenge you're grateful for really helps us to build our resilience bank. Because we often don't realize that we have actually overcome so many challenges, but we kind of run away from them or dismiss them, and we wonder, how am I strong? Am I resilient? Can I do it? Can I overcome this challenge?
A measure of Asian mentality too, the self-deprecating, the self-effacing, that sort of thing.
The other-centricity kind of a mindset, right?
Yeah.
And then last but not least, we might ask them, you know, what about you are you grateful for? Right? In the sense of then appreciating your own strengths, your own, you know, talents and resources and all that.
Challenging endeavor again, Anthea. You're asking people to almost think of themselves in this narcissistic and arrogant fashion. Again, the Asian sensibility comes into play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Blowing my own horn, trumpeting my own achievements, that kind of thing. But really, perhaps we don't do enough of it.
We don't. And then that's why we wanted to be quiet. You don't have to tell everyone, especially if you're feeling like you might be judged for being narcissistic or self-centered, right? It's just taking that moment. And some people do it in 5 minutes. Some take as long as 20 minutes to go through that. But at least it's guided, so they don't feel uncomfortable, you know, in this blank silence. They then actually come together on their, still on their own in silence. They use tea as ink to do tea art with their fingers. So that can in itself also create, it's more tactile, they're moving, but they're still in silence, so not as scary. And then if they wish to, they come together and share, and that's very powerful, especially in a workplace environment. It does change the team culture, and many, many, you know, clients of ours have actually shared that. It really does change the team culture when they come together to share after such an experience.
Let's talk about the business aspect of things in a social enterprise. We earlier mentioned there's a disparity between companies' perceptions as to how much it costs to, say, redesign jobs, to incorporate the differently abled type of workers they might want to hire but are perhaps apprehensive about, versus, say, a normal abled person. There is this disparity. How do you think it's come about?
I think it's the same with all the perceptions that we have, you know. We know it through hearsay and through what we read, you know, sometimes even what we watch on movies and TV. But it's really not, right? I mean, I think Hush is a great example. We're not only just kind of saying, oh, we just hire one or two differently abled persons. The entire team is actually completely run and powered by, and I really don't get as involved now at all even. They run all the projects on their own. So it's absolutely possible, and we are a social enterprise, but still, you know, profitable and very financially viable. So I think it is that misconception that we really need to keep dispelling.
How though?
like this. We talk more about it. And the other part is also doing studies and going down to the ground and understanding the ground reality. So in the same study that you just cited by NCSS, the National Council of Social Service, that same study on the attitudes of, you know, persons with mental health conditions also cited that factually, the business case is very clear. Because businesses have actually shared, the local employers have shared that for every dollar that's been invested, that actually you get $5.60 in return, right? So, okay, that's very hard fact that we can share. And then the stories like Harsh and many, many others that we can also share and put it out there. And then, of course, there are groups like, you know, the one that we came together, that I came together with 25 other leaders of businesses and also institutions to come together as a ground-up leaders initiative to champion for workplace well-being, for more inclusive employment practices, including persons in recovery from mental health conditions as a leadership priority, right? So then that, you know, it's got to be kind of a more sort of systemic overall and holistic.
A collective effort.
Yes, very much. Very much.
In line with Hush Tea Bar, I think we should end the interview now, don't you think? HushTeaBar.com is where you can find them. That's HushTeaBar.com. Anthea Ong is founder of Hush Tea Bar and a nominated Member of Parliament.
Thank you, Howie. Thanks for having me.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at MoneyFM893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.